Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show alive and kicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, what it's like to burn out at work, in relationships, in health, and from the relentless pressure to get it right. I'll be joined by the burnout coach, Gillian O'Gorman, and she'll talk from personal experience and advise on how we can catch it early. I'll also be joined by biochemist and inflammation expert, Dr. Daniel Jones, to hear how open heart surgery aged 5 shaped his life and career. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I had a great one. I was away in Lake Garda cheering on a group of women from a running group where I live. Many of them are close friends of mine, and they all took part in a half marathon. My best friend Alison is a seasoned marathon runner, and I have cheered her on in Dublin a couple of times, New York when we turned 40, and when I heard Lake Garda was on the cards, I decided to bestow her with my support there too. It is a gorgeous part of the world, so lovely to step out of everyday life and potter around cobbled streets with a few friends. And I'm always struck, I remember saying it after the Camino, because you're stopping in small little towns, and Lake Garda isn't tiny, but I suppose Riva, where we were, was relatively small. You realise how built up even our suburbs here in Dublin have become. I mean, there are no coffee chains or, you know, nail salons bursting at the seams in the place. Everywhere is authentic Italian, and it's actually really nice to have that old school authentic flavour. I also love the atmosphere of a race day, and for the first time, myself and my friend Chantal were armed with a large tricolour, which I have to say went down an absolute storm with every Irish person who passed us. We based ourselves at the last kilometre or so, so we were giving them that one last push. So it was a nice feeling to be connecting with Irish people and other nationalities as we shook the flag. So I was with a group from Howth and Sutton here in Dublin called Urban Running. There were 28 of them, which was amazing to see, an amazing group of women. And Georgie and Jamie Crawford were also there. They had over 100 people for Team Good Glow. The Ryanair flight on the way back was packed with Irish runners, all of them with a story to tell about what brought them there, about what they learned, about the friends and connections that they had made. So it was just incredible. If you are in any way drawn to doing an event like that, I would say go for it, or take a leaf out of my book and just follow a group and bring a flag. There is a lot of run talk before and after, and many times by the group I was apologised to for it, but there really is no need. I'd want to discuss it in depth too. It truly is the power of shared experience. The real power is in that sense of community, the people you run with every week, the pals you train with, the people you meet when you head away on these trips, and even the deep chats you have with someone as you run alongside them for a few kilometres and then never see them again. Everyone always asks me if I'm tempted to do it myself, but for now, I'm quite happy on my spin bike and doing more of a hike than a run. But never say never. I'm all up for community and connection. So who knows? You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Mount Congreve Gardens in Waterford has announced the return of Restival 2026, its annual wellness festival. It's taking place over the Maybank holiday weekend, Saturday the 2nd and Sunday the 3rd of May. Among a programme of talks and experiences, Gillian O'Gorman, the burnout coach, will present Burn Bright, Not Out, offering practical strategies for sustainable performance and how we can avoid pushing ourselves well beyond our limit. Gillian, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire.
And that's a nice gig. I've been down to Mount Congreve, and it's a gorgeous spot.
Oh, it's spectacular. And I think this event, like what really attracted me when they contacted me, was the whole thing of Restival, but also the sense of bringing people into nature. You know, we all have this great kind of intention sometimes to get out in nature, but the business of life can kind of distract us. So actually holding this in the gardens is, I think it's really magical, actually.
Yeah, very jealous of that name, Restival. It's a really good one. And I've done forest bathing with Dr. Mark Rowe, who's based in Waterford around Mount Congreve Gardens, and I know that's happening in the festival, so if anyone can get themselves on that, I would highly recommend it. But let's talk about you and your talk then. You've become the burnout coach based on personal experience.
Yes, yeah. I guess my experience with burnout first happened back in 2011, 2012, and at a time where nobody was really talking about burnout. And to be honest with you, I wasn't really sure what it was myself, only that the doctor signed me off work. I took 2 weeks off and went back into the kind of the fire of it all again, and I suppose repeated those patterns. So it took me a bit of time, and I suppose also when I became a trained wellbeing coach and started looking at belief systems and my own wellbeing, and you know, I guess, you know, how I conducted myself, or this need to push myself beyond my capacity all the time, that it really kind of spurred me towards looking at burnout back in 2020. So I started to specialize as a coach in burnout, and you'd be amazed, you know, the amount of people that gravitated towards me when I shared my story of, you know, being in the corporate environment and burning out not once but a few times, and then that really awkward, uncomfortable feeling when I realized I was the common denominator. So it can be so easy at times to blame, you know, organizations, bosses, partners, family, when there is a repeat pattern. You really do have to look at yourself, and that's what I help people to do, is to become a little bit more aware of how they're showing up in their patterns.
And can you tell us what you were feeling like, or what was going on in life at that time you were signed off by the doctor?
Yeah, like I was working in a retail company, and it was very fast paced, you know, so the demands were kind of quite beyond my capacity, really. And I guess what I was feeling was this sense of I'm not doing enough and I'm not good enough. And so it was almost normalizing this pushing beyond my capacity. And so when people on the outside would say, "God, they're crazy hours, you're working," there was this sense, no, you have to, that's what I have to do. And so there was a lack of safety in actually saying no and not having any boundaries. So how that showed up physiologically, I was actually just speaking to a client yesterday about this. It was kind of like a crunching in my head a little bit. So, you know, I had no clear thoughts. But also there was kind of neurological symptoms for me, which was kind of scary. So at times I'd have panic attacks. I'd be numb on the side of my left hand side of my face. Now, obviously this doesn't happen for everybody, but this is where stress can bring people. And I had a fear then that there was something bigger going on. So my body now was going into complete shutdown. I was sleeping. For some people, they don't sleep. I was sleeping, but I never felt rested.
And I think a lot of people can identify with that. And because life is so fast paced now, so many people wake up exhausted and feel tired all the time. I remember my GP telling me that's one of the number one reasons people book in for a GP. It's not necessarily an illness, it's a feeling. Yeah. And they don't realize it's burnout. They just think this is the way life is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have a culture now of normalizing chronic stress, and people are, you know, putting on masks all the time, and they're just accepting, oh, that this is just the way it is if I want to live my life in a certain way. And I often say, when your body is, you know, feeling tired, depleted, you know, it really is a call out. It's a sign, and it's an invitation for you to, you know, really question why that is, because that isn't normal. But how often do we hear people say, "Well, I'm not going to go to the doctor for that," or "I don't have time," or "Sure, look, everybody's tired." And that is this kind of self-abandonment that a lot of us do. So we don't actually take the time to think, okay, I deserve to feel better. And what is it that is making me feel this way? And a lot of the people I work with, you know, are prioritizing other people all the time, or have a little bit of shame if they're feeling this kind of depletion, because they're comparing themselves to other people. So it's consistently just pushing and not really, you know, knowing how to love or care for yourself.
So what do we do when we reach that moment or that feeling? And hopefully people don't get to that rock bottom moment where they're really forced to change something. Because again, people will say, well, you know, my family demands are still going to be there. I still have financial demands. I have to keep going. How did you reconcile with your recovery? And what do you say to people about managing and being more sustainable in their performance?
Yeah, so I look at two areas around, you know, responsibilities and capacity. And, you know, you kind of, you know, hinted at there when we were talking about, you know, financial kind of worries and family worries. You know, we are different now, like I'm in my 40s, and we are different now than we were in our 20s. So for me, I had to really look at what did success look like for me? And I realized I was operating out of a very old belief that success for me meant, you know, money and career progression. And as I kind of got older in my life, I realized that really, I didn't have a lot of value on that. You know, success for me was happiness. And so when I look at what makes me happy, it was having a more balanced life. And so when you look at what balance is, then it's very clear where you need to put boundaries in place. So for people, I get them to look at like, what is it that's driving them? You know, what are the fears? That fear-based thinking really does, you know, I suppose, spur on our behaviours. And when people start to see their story and recognise their story, and I recognise my story, and my story was very fear-based, and it was coming from an insecure place, that I felt like I needed to be more all the time in order for me to be worthy. And you'd be surprised how often, you know, people, men, women, CEOs, you know, women staying at home have this, you know, I need to look better, I need to be better all the time. So there is this sense of a poor kind of foundation. So when you talk about sustainability, then you really do have to look at, okay, what are my responsibilities? What are my non-negotiables? And what is my capacity? And it can be really alarming when we take a step back and we start looking at that, because we're like, well, I'm not really setting myself up for success. No wonder I'm exhausted. Or also, no wonder I feel like I'm not getting anything right because I'm trying to do too much all the time. So there is this sense of failure that exists. And then that feeds into that emotional exhaustion also.
Well, it sounds like it'll be an incredible, eye-opening, insightful talk for people. And I love that you base it around self-worth and letting go of this idea that we're not enough and having a look at what does true success mean? And, you know, and if it's waking up feeling refreshed and a bit more content in our life, how can we tweak things to make that happen? People can find out about Gillian's talk and the entire festival at mountcongreve.com. But where can people find you, Gillian?
I'm on theburnoutcoach.ie is my website, and Instagram at theburnoutcoach.ie.
Gillian O'Gorman, The Burnout Coach. Lovely to meet you. Thank you so much
Thanks
for
so
coming
much,
on.
Claire.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking. Now, my next guest, Dr. Daniel Jones, is a biochemist and health supplement formulator. Inspired by science as a young child, he is on a mission to help as many people as he can. He graduated from UCD with a PhD in physiology, focusing on inflammation and metabolic systems. He's been involved in the formulation of some of Ireland's best known supplements. And Dr. Daniel Jones joins me in studio now. Daniel, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, we got chatting at the launch of your supplement recently. And when you started to tell your life story, I was like, you need to come on the show, not just because you're an expert in inflammation, but because you've got such a story to tell. So I'm delighted we're doing this finally.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I mean, sure, we're all product of our experiences, right? So, you know, there's a lot that has, I think, shaped all of our journeys. And I'm just really excited to have the opportunity to do what we're doing.
So you said that your journey really began at five. You had to have open heart surgery as a very young child.
So it actually even began a little earlier than that. I basically went into cardiac arrest when I was getting christening. And I turned blue. And my parents grabbed me out of the priest's hands and rushed me to the hospital. And if I hadn't gotten there a moment earlier, I would have died. So, you know, from a very early age, I was kind of set up with, you know, a body and a system that was compromised. And, you know, that really hit home very close, you know, especially hearing that as I got older. But by the time I was 5 years old, I need to have open heart surgery. And they had to wait to five because they needed to wait till I was big enough that they could do surgery, but not too big, because if I got to six, seven, my heart wouldn't be able to keep up with my body. And I again would have gone into cardiac arrest and passed away.
Wow. And what do you remember from that time, or do you? Because it's hard to know with memories. Sure, do you remember what you were told, or are there things you remember?
There's some things that I will never forget, for sure. One, I remember, I have a very vivid memory of laying in the hospital bed, and I think this is where I think my mortality really became solidified in my five-year-old brain, when my kindergarten class brought in cards for me, but, you know, they didn't get proper instructions from the teacher exactly what was happening, and a number of them were kind of like, you know, me passing away and as a ghost and like, you know, sorry you're dying along those lines. So I very much realized the situation I was in. And my moms, I grew up at, you know, in a household, two moms and stuff, were very adamant about how stubborn I was with that and, you know, just was not going to accept that. And I, you know, they said I was a fighter. Even post-surgery, the hospital gave me like this certificate that said little brave fellow and stuff. And so it was very obviously formative, but that experience with, you know, other kids my age and seeing kind of myself through their eyes as someone who was sick and possibly passing away, you know, it just like, no, like I'm just getting started, you know, and I've never taken a moment of life for granted after that. I very much feel that I'm here for a great purpose. You know, people, doctors who've dedicated their lives to studying how the heart works, to open me up, to fix my heart, to give me the rest of my life back, I'm here to help people as well. And that was just so important to my core memory and what makes me me.
And also that fellow kindergartner who drew that picture of a ghost, even though it should have been filtered out yes. before it made it to you. But yeah, to realize life is precious.
Exactly.
And was there any time where you had to consider your health or your heart after that? Or was it that surgery and then onwards?
Oh, of course. I mean, I had the heart surgery when I was five. I got pneumonia. You know, I had a number of really important memories that were just implanted in my brain forever during that experience. But then after that, you know, still, you know, then I had this massive scar down my chest and stuff. And I was always on the swim team. I was a kid. So then I had to answer a lot of questions about what's this massive scar down my chest. And, you know, I had to go to a lot of doctor's appointments, constantly checking up. You know, it went from like every couple months to every 6 months. I mean, up until I was a teenager, I was going once a year. And I'm very lucky, you know, that my heart is stronger than ever. And, you know, the cardiologists have told me that, you know, I have a bit of hypertrophy in my heart. But basically, because my heart had to pump so hard during the first years of my life before I had my surgery, my heart is stronger now as a response of that. So I feel very, very physically fit. I feel very healthy. I've never felt better in my entire life, even though I'm, you know, I've never been older. I've never felt better. So
yeah, it's amazing. And we'll get to that in a bit. But I'm not ready to leave your early years, because we can only touch on them. But you really did live life. And a lot of it, as you say, is down to your formative setup. And your moms were life livers, weren't they? You grew up in a very fun, entertaining house full of love.
Oh, absolutely. And my father as well. Like, you know, I got to see him some weekends and stuff, and, you know, take me up the mountains. But I lived with my two moms. One is kind of a comedian and musician, and the other one was a cook, and, you know, mostly spoke Spanish as her first language. And it was just a very fun and exciting household. Of course, it was a bit wild, but, you know, I never doubted how much my moms cared and were, you know, invested, all my entire family, my father as well, in my health and well-being, especially growing up such a sick child. I always felt that there is, you know, a little bit more focus of that in the family, where a lot of my other cousins, you know, were very healthy, normal kids that, you know, and I was the only child, you know, so there was just a little kind of extra, I think, attention on my upbringing, for better or worse. But
so there were all kinds of adventures, including big names in the music business, mm-hmm. in the film business. Mm-hmm. But medicine became your path. When did you make that decision?
I always was obsessed with science. I mean, from my heart surgery when I was 5 years old, I mean, I looked at those doctors. And I think I mentioned during the launch, I had a team of cardiologists who were assigned to me because of my case. And, you know, it's so funny, like I still always remember their names, Dr. Black, Dr. White, and Dr. Green. And I said, you know, it was like, am I in Cluedo? Like, what is happening? But they were amazing cardiologists. And it just blew my mind that human beings like myself, like anyone, were able to do this, were able to dedicate their lives, understand to such a large degree how our biology and heart works to fix me, to give me the rest of my life back. That's what started it all. You know, I never really had, you know, sports posters on my wall. I was never really into, like, you know, superstars or athletes or movie stars. I never was. I was obsessed with science. Carl Sagan was my biggest hero ever. And, you know, the seed was planted in that surgery, but it started to really blossom when I was probably about 8 years old and I was given a book of science facts. And one of the facts in the book was, and I still think about it to this day, was that a teaspoon of a neutron star was the same weight as 100 fully laden battleships. And my small 8-year-old brain kept trying to, I'm like, how is that possible? But it really just, you know, had resonated that there, this world, this reality, this life, everything is so much more complicated than we really understand. And that really started blossoming. I mean, and after that, I always had a massive passion for music because of the household I grew up in. But science always underpinned everything. Even to when I was working in the pharmaceutical industry in U.S. Post-college, I was volunteering at the Franklin Institute, which is a children's science museum, because not only do I care about science, I care about kids getting interested in science early, because this is what shapes our future. You know, we need scientists. So explaining to 5 to 10-year-olds how the heart works, where stars come from, where rainbows come from. This became like my daily thing, and I love it. You know, and I have such a massive appreciation for our world of reality and humans, people. You know, I just want everyone to be able to live their very special gift of life to the fullest.
So what was it you studied at college?
So in college, I did my undergraduate in biology with a minor in chemistry and biochemistry. And then after this, for a while, I was actually thinking to go into veterinary medicine because, again, I had a huge interest in science and medicine, but I also have a massive passion for animals. But it wasn't until I got my first job and it was in research that my past started changing a bit. And I really, really loved and had a passion for research because it felt like this puzzle that was being solved and put together by everyone around the world, and everyone would do their little piece, and you were always on the cusp of the unknown, and you would have to take that kind of jump into the dark. And then obviously you follow it up with the experimentation with research to find out, you know, if you're on the right track. But it's being on that cusp of the unknown and sometimes doing an experiment or doing research and seeing the data for the first time in the world was really, that's magic to me. Like, that's so interesting. And I don't think a lot of people really appreciate how much creativity it takes to be in science and research, because knowledge will only take you so far for what we know. And beyond that line, it is unknown. So it takes a lot of creativity to be like, well, what if it's this mechanism? Or what if this hormone is affecting, you know, this pathway? And then obviously you have to explore that. But that, you know, kind of being on that line of discovery was amazing. That was magic to me.
There was a point in your life, though, where you weren't feeling good. You said you've never felt better, but there was a turning point in your early 20s where you thought, I feel really bad in my body. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Because, you know, it's this kind of trying to, you know, resolve my love of science and passion for science with getting caught up in that, you know, you're just your daily life and your routine. You know, I was living in America where I was born in Philadelphia, and American culture can take hold of you. And I was just very busy. I remember I had just left college. I just started working in the lab in a pharmaceutical. So this was just before I started realizing what was happening. And I was just out of college and I was working really hard. I was volunteering at the Franklin Institute Science Museum. I was working pharmaceuticals, long hours, and then, you know, hanging out with my friends. And I was just driving constantly, eating really bad food, just quickly, constantly. And there was no attention on what I was putting into my body and then really what I was doing with my body. And I remember having this moment. I think I was about 23, 24 years old, and I was driving home from the laboratory. And I was just really sick a lot. And then I started having really bad back pains. And I just honestly felt like my body was breaking down. I don't know how else to say it besides that. And that's exactly what it felt like. I felt like I was breaking down. And I was only 23 years old. And I remember explicitly saying to myself, like, I don't get it. I don't do anything. Because my initial reaction is like, you know, I don't play like, you know, heavy sports. I'm not like beating up my body. And, you know, I'm not eating the worst food, but I'm not eating good food. And then it clicked. I feel this way because I'm not doing anything. I'm not focusing on what I'm putting into my body, and I'm not focused on what I'm doing with my body. And, you know, our bodies are the greatest gift we'll be ever given, truthfully. You know, we talk about winning the lottery sometimes. We've already won the lottery. The fact that we're alive, we have brains, we have consciousness, we're able to do things, we have health, we have our bodies, that is everything. But our bodies are amazing machines that need proper fuel, and they need to be used. You know, it's similar to like, you know, if you have a classic car, if you put good fuel in it and you take care of it, it can last forever. You know, it can do amazing things. But at the same time, if I buy a brand new car and let it sit in the garage for ages, it's going to be breaking down. You know, things are going to start going wrong with it. We are not that different. So it's just looking after ourselves. We want to be used. We want to be active and move. We want good fuel. But when we do these two things, as simple as it sounds, it has profound, profound knock-on effects. And that's what I really want to try to get across to people. And it's never too late to start. You know, I was 23, 24 at the time, and I felt so sick, and I was getting sick all the time and breaking down. But it's all about making little positive steps in the right direction and just keep building that momentum. It doesn't have to be everything all at once.
How long did it take for you to turn things around? Because I do think that's really interesting. Before you, I was speaking to Gillian O'Gorman, the burnout coach. Mm. And our lives still continue to be busy, and we still continue to have financial demands, family demands, work demands. So how did you turn it around?
I mean, it takes sometimes, you know, a long time. It's, again, you know, that's a very, you know, I think, accurate point that we can burn out quickly. So it's not all about changing everything all at once and overwhelming yourself, because that can very much happen. And coming from, you know, nutrition and research and formulation as I do, I get a lot of people asking me all the time questions. And I've very rarely have never met anyone who wants to improve their lives through health or wellness and nutrition. It just seems like this insurmountable mountain. Where do we begin? So where do you begin? You find little achievable things that you can really do, even on a weekly basis. And then you just try to kind of keep adding to that. You know, it's nearly like a painting. Like, you don't start out with it finished. You start out with like little levers, little details. And more it starts coming into shape. And as it becomes part of your life and you start realizing it and loving it, then it just becomes part of you.
Yeah, I think I love the painting analogy, and you can keep chipping away at it.
Of course.
Forever, yeah. And it can keep evolving. Well, I better take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to ask, what brought you here? When did you begin to get into inflammation and formulating some of the best known supplements we have here in Ireland? We'll see you after this short break.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking with me, Claire McKenna, where I'm joined in studio by biochemist and inflammation expert, Dr. Daniel Jones. Daniel, we were talking before the break about, you know, everything that led to your 20s, but at what point did you arrive here in Ireland?
So I actually moved here when I was about 24. I had my 25th birthday when I was in Ireland already. So about when I was 24, I think the May before I turned 25, yeah.
And what brought you to the Emerald Isle?
So I, at the time, was about a year into over nearly 2 years working at the pharmaceutical industry in the U.S. And I think a lot of people, you know, have this idea of what the pharmaceutical industry in the U.S., it's probably exactly what you think. Like, it's massive. It's extremely competitive. There are a lot of drugs being developed. You know, there's a lot of, you know, finer, minute details to the mechanisms of how these drugs are being developed. But one thing that I really started understanding pretty quickly is that every pharmaceutical company had an as big, if not larger, nutraceutical division. So basically where they study nutrition and they study components of our food. And what happens is, as we understand these components and how they affect different pathways, biological systems within our body, you know, then there's explored, well, how can we purify this? How can we patent this? How can we increase the things? And that's often what becomes medication or therapeutics. So in my research in drug development, I started really becoming interested in the nutrition side. And to me, it became more of the kind of proactive approach rather than the reactive. You know, medication is very important, obviously, when your doctor prescribes medication. But what this is an intervention. Something's already gone wrong. It's like the house is already on fire. Now we need to send firefighters in. We need to put it out. We need to correct what's wrong. Then we need to start rebuilding things. When you look at nutrition, it's much more proactive. It's kind of like, okay, well, we have, you know, the fire detectors up. You know, we have the fire extinguisher in case something goes wrong. It's proactive. So you're stopping something from even happening in the first place. You're not waiting for that fire to break out. You're keeping your house in good order, and the fire may never happen. And that's the more optimal pathway. So in understanding that this power within nutrition got me more and more interested. And I was already in love with research. I was in love with the process of research. So I started looking at programs around the world where I could really dive into and specialize in inflammation and metabolic research was really my biggest focus, because I'm a firm believer that it's inflammation that underpins pretty much everything that goes wrong in our bodies. So if we can get to the core of the problem, if we can start fixing that, there's this, you know, domino effect that everything else just starts working better and everything else starts feeling better. So that was the main focus that brought me.
So what is inflammation? What's going on in the body when it's inflamed?
Sure. I think most people are very familiar with what we would call acute inflammation or short-term inflammation. And we love using the analogy of twisting the ankle, because I think nearly everyone has done it. Everyone is very familiar. You start getting the four signs of inflammation, which is redness, which is swelling, which is heat, and which is pain. These are the four characteristics of inflammation. But what happens when you twist your ankle is, you know, you get white blood cells. All these inflammatory markers are sent out to signal to the body that there's damage, which then sends the system into repair, recovery. And then as you do repair and recovery and the ankle heals, that inflammation dissipates and it goes away. That's what a normal inflammatory response is. What is abnormal and what we talk about, systemic inflammation, is similar to what's happening in your ankle, but it starts popping up in systems all over your body. You can have inflammation in your cardiovascular system. You can have hypertension. You can have inflammation within your muscles and getting that muscle pain within your joints for osteoarthritis. And I love using the analogy of fire, because I think it really does, you know, kind of really explain what is the mechanism of inflammation. And it's like these little fires can start breaking out all over your body. And if you, you know, envision your body like a city of all these systems, fires can catch from one system to the other. And before you know it, the whole city can be up in flames. And that's what, you know, really chronic systemic inflammation is. And the body isn't able to recover and repair itself, because if our, you know, our reactive system to repair inflammation is to send out, you know, our emergency services when our body put these fires out, it can't put them out if they're all over, or if your body doesn't even know where the fires are. So this is the complications that people deal with when it gets a systemic inflammation. And the result of that is people just start feeling unwell. And the signs can be everything from poor energy, disrupted digestive system, poor sleep, poor recovery, poor mental function. And we don't even realize that, you know, these things that are starting to affect us in our day-to-day, and like, oh, I just don't feel the same. I don't feel as energized, or I keep getting sick because I have inflammation, which is compromising my immune system. And it turns out that it's coming down to this core issue, which is that inflammation has gone awry in our body and it can't correct itself.
And there's so much that we do know clearly about inflammation, but there's so much we don't know about the increase in autoimmune conditions. For example, endometriosis is an inflammatory condition, and there are so many unanswered questions. But what do we know? What can we do to help? Does it always come back to nutrition, or often come back to nutrition?
So it comes back to a number of things. I mean, nutrition is definitely a piece of the puzzle, but, you know, like going back to 20-year-old me, it's lifestyle as well. It's activity. It's staying active. I mean, one of the worst things for metabolic disorders, things like diabetes, is lean muscle. You know, that is kind of a protective barrier to metabolic disorders. So if we're staying active, if we're keeping our bodies moving as well as sleeping right, staying hydrated, and focusing on nutrition. Yeah, these are kind of the four cornerstones to helping to stay away and keeping inflammation down, because inflammation does want to go down. It becomes like kind of a broken negative feedback loop where it just kind of keeps increasing and your body's not able to bring it down. And it's often because we are pushing ourselves too far in certain areas. We're not sleeping enough. We're not recovering enough. We're not staying hydrated enough. But also we don't have the resources the body's looking for to start lowering that inflammation. There are mechanisms which require immune cells, which require a reduction in hormone and cytokine levels. And if our body is depleted in resources and unable to do so, it just can't do so. Like I try to explain to people, you know, there's so much that your body even needs to do for, say, repairing your joints, something that are very familiar with when it comes to inflammation. If I give you just flour and tell you to bake a cake, can you bake a cake? Absolutely not. You need all the ingredients. You need all the resources. When our joints are going to repair, recover, restore synovial fluid, reduce inflammation, restore our collagen within our cartilage, it needs resources and it needs the proper resources to do so. With those deficiencies, it can't do so. So the inflammation not only continues, it starts to get worse.
I always think it's a fine line. And I know I said it on stage with you that night, between sounding like it's judgmental advice that anyone who has osteoarthritis or endometriosis, that it's something they did wrong and that they didn't, you know, have enough green leafy veg. But it's not really about that. That's not the message. The message is empowering, that there are certain things we can do to reduce symptoms, to help us cope better, to perhaps stave off disease and illness and conditions later in life. It is set to empower, not to judge or to finger wag.
No, absolutely. And look, you know, it's one of those things that I think the information is really key here, and understanding that if we just support our bodies and our physiology, because this is what our bodies naturally want to do. They want to repair, they want to recover. But we can only do so much. And I'm so understanding that, yes, we are living busier lives than ever. And people are doing what they can. And it is by no fault that our food is less nutritious than ever as well. You know, it's not the focus of nutrition on food is not what it used to be. And there are different aspects of our culture and our lifestyles, from, you know, over farming and stuff, which is depleting soil of nutrients. There's just, unfortunately, you know, we are just subject to the circumstances we're in. So it's really not people's fault, absolutely. It's about, well, what can we do to make small changes to improve our lives and get on the right track and start making those right steps in the right direction.
So you've made it very clear that there's a real holistic approach.
Absolutely.
But obviously supplementation has its place, because you've been involved in the formulation of some of the best known supplements here in Ireland, Revive Active, Sisterly, and now you've released your own supplement with Una O'Hagan at One. And this is to target inflammation. So I know it's very obvious where you stand on supplementation. There is a place for it. But, you know, I think people are looking for a magic pill. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, what do I take? What, you know, there's a huge amount of overwhelm with supplementation, mm-hmm. isn't there? And do you think we place too much weight in supplementation and not looking at overall lifestyle? I mean, the mm-hmm. clue is in the name. It's to be added on top of, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's exactly it. You know, when I talk about what's really important to health and wellness, you know, it's not just supplementation, nutrition. It is diet. It is lifestyle. It is sleep and recovery. It is hydration. You know, it's mental health as well. You know, this has such an aspect. You know, I don't think people appreciate, you know, the heart-brain connection and how much there is a connection to mental health for our physical well-being as well. But as me and Una always say, like, we can't help you with everything. Like, we can't be tucking in bed at night, you know, every night and making sure, you know, we're showing up, you know, and, you know, just don't forget to stay hydrated. But if there's something that we can help with, it's the nutrition aspect. And we can make the best formulation possible. And we can, you know, focus on all the right ingredients and dosages and try to make at least this part of your life, this piece, simple and uncompromised, and just get to the core issue. And that's what At One is really focused on, in terms of getting to inflammation, to getting to the core of the issue, to start improving the function of all of the other systems in our bodies, everything from our cardiovascular to our nervous system to our skeletal system to make sure that we are feeling our best. Our muscular system, all these are really important. And that's part of that holistic approach.
And you're very keen on educating people. Like everything you've said here, you said on the launch night, you're putting it out on social media. So how have you been finding this part of your work? I mean, I said to you, I think you're made for this, the sharing of information and making complex scientific information palatable for us lay people out here. But to come out of the lab and into audiences and be getting the feedback, and have you found that?
I love it. I mean, I believe this is part of my purpose. You know, I think I started developing the ability to communicate and to put things in very digestible, palatable terms, working with children. I mean, to try to get the attention of 15 kids, you know, who are 8 years old and try to explain how stars are made. You know, you got to really tap into and, you know, you got to start getting into the wonderment that, like, you're actually made of stardust. Like, all of the molecules that make our bodies as human beings were forged in the centers of stars. You have to, you know, really, I think, appeal to people. But, you know, I'm a firm believer science and health and nutrition is so amazing. You know, it's just finding the right things and communicating that to people. So I do feel like this is a massive part of my purpose. I feel like this is where the journey begins, with information and understanding. And if you can even take a few kind of little seeds that you might find interesting and try to start incorporating in their lives, this is how we make big changes with little steps. And I want to, you know, help in any way I can. And I do think the first line of that is helping to get as much information out there as possible and to help people.
You've been sharing a lot of the reviews online. And one that really struck me was there's a morning sachet and an evening sachet. And people are saying it's really nice to be taking that time for myself. Hmm. And I thought that seemed quite sad. You know, I mean, it's a step in the right direction for this person, but the fact that just shaking a sachet into a glass twice a day is the only thing they do for themselves, and that's kind for themselves and mindful for themselves, that'll just show you how much we are pushing ourselves.
We are living busier lives than ever. I mean, we're so in demand with work, with family, with friends. You know, we have what feels like less time than ever, you know, with everything that takes up our day. So it is really important to have these little moments where you're taking time with your health, with your body. And that's why we built these into what we, you know, refer to routines and rituals. And these rituals are really important, both in the morning and the evening, when our physiology and our bodies are shifting. You know, there's a lot that goes on in your body when you're waking up in the morning. There's a lot that's going on in your body when you're relaxing and going to into a sleep, rest, recover mode. And we really want to support this. You know, it really isn't a one size fits all that, you know, something just covers you all day. We have different physiological needs, nutritional needs at the morning and the evening. And that's something we want to support as well. It's just At One was really all about bringing everything back to biology, you know, just our natural circadian rhythm, our 24-hour cycle, getting to the core of the issue of inflammation. And that's what we wanted to do, because that's where we felt we can get the most benefit and the most for what you're investing into your health.
So I know listeners are going to have enjoyed your personal story and this interview and just listening to you speak. But I always think at the end of something like this, people are like, well, where do I start? You know, there's been a lot of information here. So what's your advice to them?
I would suggest, you know, one of the best places to start is just focusing on your sleep. You know, taking that morning or evening ritual and taking some time to yourself, even if it's a little, you know, reading or meditation or whatever, you know, appeals to you, and start getting into that better kind of ritual or routine. And, you know, pop into your local pharmacy or health food store, you know, have a chat. You know, there are so many things that we can do to just make little steps. I mean, one of the easiest, I think, is, you know, focusing on that sleep and focusing on hydration. And when you start incorporating other elements in terms of nutrition and then lifestyle and activity, you will have profound, profound benefits.
Yeah. And I love what you said about being proactive. We do work in a crisis model in our healthcare system where we wait for something to go wrong and then we seek help. And, you know, of course, that's fair enough. That's what you'd want, is to be patched up and sent back on your way. But what about being more proactive about feeling better right now? And that's exactly what you did for your life, one step at a time. And it's great to hear. Are you nearly double where you were at 24? I don't want to guess your age. You know, you're a bit younger than that, are you?
I'm a bit younger than that. But yes, I mean,
To feel better as you're aging, to be feeling better now than you did at 24, I think is enough of a reason for people to say, well, maybe actually, yeah, one yeah. step at a time. What can I add in to make myself feel better? And it does seem to be the boring things, but it does pay off.
I mean, I turned myself into an experiment for those years. You know, when I was working at the pharmaceutical and then going into my doctorate, which was very much more nutrition focused and inflammation and metabolism, you know, I needed to understand these things firsthand. So I started, you know, kind of incorporating these things in my own life, you know, different nutritional blends, different forms of activity, and everything from even looking at markers in my blood to see how my body would respond. I just became so obsessed with the power of it and what could actually be gotten out of it when you invest properly in it. So I mean, I honestly do feel better than ever. I'm still on that journey. I don't think it's a journey that really ever ends. And I think that's an important thing. Like, there's not a definitive starting line. There's not a definitive finish line. And it's not about the starting. It's not about the finishing. It's about the journey. It's just about getting on that path, feeling like you're on the path and trying to stay in that right direction. And just along the way, you know, what else is something else I can do? Okay, here's maybe, you know, I can incorporate a new veg, which I don't normally eat, you know, once a week or something simple like that. And, oh, all of a sudden I find out that I really like it. And things just start becoming easier. But it's being open to things. And it's just, again, like, I just want to bring it back. It's about loving yourself. Like, you get one life. You really do. We are, our time is the most valuable thing that we'll ever have. I always talk, like, I never played lottery because I've already won it, you know. I want people to understand that, like, you can get so much more out of your time and your health and your life just by caring, giving yourself more care, more time. We're so focused on everything else. Focus on ourselves sometimes as well.
Where can people get more Daniel Jones?
So I am on Instagram. You can, you know, check out Feel It One. I'm, you know, all over there as well. Myself and Una are really passionate about, you know, speaking to everyone we can, getting information out there. So, yeah, we'll be, and we're going to be doing a road tour around the country similar to our event, our launch event. So we want to get to all the cities. And again, we just want to help people, you know, we want to get in front of people, speak to people, see what their journeys are like and how we can help.
Yeah, well, I think it's only sorry that you can't tuck everybody in. I would really welcome a science story and a rousing reminder of how important life is. But for now, this interview has been just enough. Dr. Daniel Jones, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate having me.
Right, that's it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to all of my guests, to my producer, Aoife Breen, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.